And I think I am live. Welcome to the Tripod, where we break down the NRL every game, every week from a pundit perspective. And it's Winnie here on my own, barbecuing alone to recap round 16. Please let me know if you can hear me and see me, because it's a slightly different setup this week. We've got to say happy birthday to the Podonis, if you're wondering why he's not here. I know people think he only looks about 15 years old. He's actually, I hope he doesn't mind me saying, he's hit the milestone 30 this weekend. So he's been given the night off. He's partying. And we've got to really appreciate the Podonis, what he's brought to the pod this year. It's not an easy shoes to fill for anyone. It hasn't been easy. It hasn't been easy for me, and especially for him to come in and his first season be a season where we've struggled so much. And that's not a knock on Podonis. It's really hard for him because I have the final say in every best bet. And I, you know, as much as I respect Podonis's ability in handicapping, I think I just care too much about the results to ever allow us to tip something that I can't fully get behind. So I just think the way it has to be for me to feel happy running this, I have to have the final say on the best bet. So he doesn't always control what makes the cut or what we end up supporting with our best bets. And I think it's fair to say we have struggled kind of getting our system right. People have given us feedback. Well, maybe you should just tip individually instead of saying you like this, Podonis likes this. Oh, I still maintain two heads are better than one, and it has added to the show, Podonis' insights each week. I think it's just made it a more enjoyable listen rather than me being solo like I was all last year. And look, when you have the truth of the matter is, I think we've both had seasons we're not happy with. We've both struggled a bit with our tipping. So when you have two tipsters separately, if they're both doing awesome, and then you kind of overlap that Venn diagram of two really good tipsters' results or picks, you're probably going to be even stronger. But if both are struggling, it doesn't really matter. I guess what I'm getting at, I don't think the system is necessarily the issue. I think if we're both doing better, then it would come out in the best bets. And if we're both doing separately, I don't think either of those would be where we would want it to be. And, you know, in saying all that, we went 2-2 this weekend, and I feel like we actually got both games right in the two games where we had a pair of best bets. We did win the mixed matchup at $3.15, so it's not all doom and gloom. I mean, mixed matchups this season, for as much as we've struggled, we're 8-8 after 16 rounds, which is 50%, which I know that's not, you know, 70% of 2021, but it's plus odds every week. Like I said, $3.15 this week, we needed the Sharkies and the Warriors to outscore three opponents. Well, we got there pretty easily. Dogs only had 6 points. The Tigers only had 2 points, and then the Dragons just now winning the game, but only with 12. So we won that by, must have been over 20 points there as a $3 underdog. So that's still really good plus odds. So you're definitely in profit if you just, all you did was play mixed matchups this year, even if you didn't follow our best bets. But we'll talk about the best bets and where we did go wrong anyway. Also want to talk Origin. Maybe I'll open the floor to you guys because I'm on my own. Hopefully I can get some of your comments coming through, and I appreciate people are shooting their comments through. So let's talk a little bit about Origin again. Happy birthday, Podonis. Enjoy the night off. How are the teams going to be different? I guess we just watched the Raiders play. Jack Whiten was withdrawn from Origin 2 only because of COVID. Does he get back in the Blues team? That's my first question. I would stick with Burton. I think Burton played too well at left center. I wouldn't bring Whiten back in there. So then you might say that's harsh. He misses out because of COVID. Unless the question is, can Jack Whiten play right center? And this was the interesting debate going into the weekend, which we didn't touch on Wednesday because I thought you just don't know. Is everyone going to get through? It could be a moot point. But I was thinking Freddie could pick someone else at right center. I feel like Stephen Crichton did struggle a little bit in game two. And I was wondering, can Latrell Mitchell play right center if he plays undeniable? Of course, then he took his hat out of the ring last night. So same question for Jack Whiten. It seems like Katoni Staggs, for whatever reason, is not favored. He's the one right center specialist that's available to New South Wales that would be viable. And of course, played in game one. And I don't think he did too bad. I thought he got hurt was the reason he might have struggled. And going back to Jack Whiten, I suppose he could still make the Blues team on the bench, taking Talakai's spot. But Talakai gives you a bit of cover in the forwards. Now, you can argue, can Jack Whiten cover second row? I reckon he'd probably hold up, but he has never really played there at NRL level. So those are my questions for the New South Wales. I wouldn't change any forwards, and I presume they will still pick two hookers and start with Appy. Let me know your guys' thoughts. Other people agreeing you've got to stick with Burton. And you've got to play him on the left side where it just, you know, he could be that second kicking option. He did all the left side kicking. Luai did basically none of it in game two. For Queensland, the news has broken that Kalfusi is out for family reasons. He's actually going to be in the US with, I think his father's not well, so best wishes with him. But that opens up a spot. Now, Fifita was okay. He had his moments, as he always does, but can you rely on Fifita? I don't really know if you can in that kind of 80-minute second row spot. Nanai really struggled in game two, but just because of lack of depth in that position now, Nanai will definitely retain his spot, and he was a lot better Saturday night. The guy I'm looking at is Tom Gilbert. I wouldn't be surprised if Gilbert has to make the side, and that's your safe option. And I think Fifita would be your kind of your dice roll. If you're Queensland, you're also nervous about our playmakers. Munster didn't play Thursday. He's got the shoulder issue. I'm sure he'll play. I'm just nervous. It was his shoulder 100%. And then Kalen Ponga, who was really threatening game first half of game two and had a really good game one. He's had two bad concussions in the last 3 weeks. Didn't play on the weekend. Are we sure he's right to go? I would have actually said maybe Reece Walsh comes into calculations at fullback. Of course, then he had COVID this week. If Ponga was out, they do have some options there. I heard that Gagai was also under a bit of pressure. I'm wondering if Billy Slater's looking at a guy like the Hammer and trying to figure out a way to get him in. His form's been really strong. Queensland's wingers struggled in game two, Cobbo and Taulagi, but I feel like they both played well last night, and I think they'll retain their spot. And I think if in doubt, Billy would rather pick and stick and make less changes. I see your comments coming through. And please let us know who you would be picking or if any news is kind of breaking. I don't know. Sometimes once all the games are out, it starts leaking through Twitter and online who actually is making the teams, if there's any bolters. But you wouldn't change. Well, Queensland doesn't have too many other options to change, and I don't think New South Wales will want to or feel the need to change. Of course, we've still got another round to go, but just four games. But let's talk about the eight that we just watched, and I'll just give my brief reaction to each eight games, and then we'll get out of here. First, let's hear how the bookies went, thanks to Tristan with a market update.
Hello, Tripod family. I'm just getting this to you a little bit earlier today because I'm going to be out of play shortly. So I'm doing it just starting the second half of the Tigers-Warriors game. So it looks like the Warriors are in a good position for anyone on the Warriors. I hope I haven't put the kiss of death on them, but yeah, they've certainly lifted at home. It's been an up and down weekend. The weekend started well with the Manly Storm game. There was a lot of money for the plus early doors for Manly, but then a few multis on Melbourne head to head got a little bit nerve wracking late when it looked like they were making a very big charge late at them. The second game, it was probably the sickest one from our point of view. Obviously, you all know our relationship with the Titans, and they were thoroughly outplayed. But what probably made it even and compounded the issue, and maybe we're in the bad beat category, is the bet we laid at half time, which was, I think it was minus 24 and a half, and that last try, obviously, very much against the run of play, covered it when they scored probably three tries in the last 15 minutes, and I'm not so sure about the one in the corner as well. So that was the most frustrating result of the game, of the weekend, should I say. The biggest go of the round by far and away was South. They were absolutely smashed off the map, so punters collected very nicely there. And then the other game where we actually got a result was the Bulldogs and Sharks game, where there was some good support for the Bulldogs with the plus and the weather around. So hope everyone who had a bet over the weekend was successful, and good luck with the round ahead. Thanks, guys.
So let's talk about that opening game. Manly 36 clung on to beat the Storm 30. Manly started strong. I did say on Wednesday the Storm aren't as frightening to me as they, you know, were last year or in the last couple of seasons. Obviously, Munster didn't play, but Papenhuyzen returned. And you would have said Papenhuyzen had a quiet night until the final 6 minutes. We'll get to that. But it was Manly who was out in front. Manly was in front in this game, I think, 26 or 28 points. And how much they were ahead by 14 against the Cowboys, of course, if you recall, a fortnight earlier. I mean, this one was even safer. Manly was going to win by a big margin. And then the Storm got, you know, four tries in the space of, I think, something like 6 or 7 minutes, which was pretty crazy. The Storm actually got the ball with a few seconds left, potential opportunity to tie the game. But I guess, you know, teams do switch off a little bit. Overall, you've still got to respect the performance by Manly, a guy I talk about every week, Olakau'atu, leading the way. They were hungrier. The game meant a lot to them. And they really carried on the form that saw them outplay the Cowboys for the first 70 in round 15. So they're showing that they're a very frisky side and definitely going to be in the finals hunt. And the Storm struggling a bit with their, you know, combinations and haven't had that spine continuity. They've brought in a lot of new faces in the outside backs, but they will be concerned because the Melbourne Storm side, we're not used to seeing them. It doesn't matter who lines up. We're not used to seeing them give up, you know, 36 points. On Friday, Knights defeated the Titans 38-12, a game that was, you know, basically pick 'em. And the way I break this game down is basically two feeble teams and they're mentally weak and they just cannot hack it when the going is tough. And so whichever team had momentum in this game looked great, looked like world beaters. And whoever didn't have the ball or didn't have momentum just looked woeful. And that was the Gold Coast Titans in the first half. They gave up 5 tries to none. It was only for Tex Hoy, 20% off the boot, or it would have been worse. So 22-0, it was punctuated by Tino throwing an intercept on the stroke of halftime for the fifth Knights try. So Tristan said they laid minus 24 and a half. So 22-0. So someone bet, you know, kind of the Knights to win the second half by more than 2.5 points, where, you know, the Titans just looked so woeful. And what's their excuse? They didn't have many players play rep round. Everyone got a break last week. It was so disappointing. But then the momentum did shift. You know, they were thankful to get halftime. As I said, all those missed conversions, you did feel if the Titans score one or two, it's not going to feel like they're that far away. And that's exactly what happened. The Titans did score a couple of converted tries. Suddenly it was 22-12. Adam O'Brien looked like he was about to jump out of the box. He looked sick to his stomach because the Knights were on the verge of losing the unlosable. Like, if you didn't watch this, you would never think the Titans could have won, but they really could have. 22-12 down, and they were knocking on the door. And it was only a wrong knock-on call against the Titans in attack that then gave the ball to the Knights. Then the Knights score in the corner, and I'll say score with, you can't see me because of the portrait view, but I'm using inverted commas there because they go to the bunker and the bunker claims to be sure that Edric Lee's hand was above the line. I'm not so sure. And I think he overturned the on-field decision of no try there. So you've got to be sure. That was Edric Lee's, I think, third or fourth out of five that he got on the night. So he had an absolute day out. So in the end, that broke the Titans' backs. And I think that's why Tristan's sick as well, because then the Knights scored a couple more, including one very late, and end up winning the game by 26. Moving on to a game where I do have to talk about the referees, I'm sorry to say. Have we got it here? Panthers 26 beat the Roosters 18. I didn't really have a dog in the fight for this. We did give out a multi where we leaned to Penrith and we had Penrith to win both halves. So, of course, I want the multi-leg to win. We didn't lay the points, the 15.5, with Penrith. So I was kind of actually hoping we'd be vindicated there and the Roosters would put up a good performance. And in the end, Penrith didn't rest a single player, which is a mild surprise to me, that they played full strength yet again. And actually, if you didn't see this one, I'm guessing the later Friday night games is one most people will catch. Like, the Roosters could have dead set won this game. And I do think refereeing really spoiled it. But, you know, look at the Roosters. They've lost their last four games. And they've probably, how should I say this? It's probably one of the best four-game losing streaks you've ever seen. When you consider they went down to a revitalized Canberra in Canberra, lost by a converted try, you know, and had a charge down try against them. They lost to Parramatta in a pretty frantic game. And Para, I know they struggled this weekend, but that was a really tough opponent. And then they played the Storm and they had a chance. They dropped a chance to go ahead late in the game, lose by, I think, 8 points to the Storm. And then you come to Penrith, the toughest of all those opponents, and you hold the lead in the second half with like 15 to go. And you could have won that too, but instead you've lost four in a row and you're outside the eight. So it's tough for the Roosters. And I have to talk about refereeing. Let me know what you think. I wonder if a lot of people aren't going to see it the way I did, because I just think a lot of people, we love watching Penrith play. A lot of you guys, or a lot of punters in general, had Penrith in your multis, had Penrith same game multis. So when you watch Penrith get the absolute rub of the green, it doesn't really bother you. But I really thought it was egregious, and I thought it began, well, I don't know if it began here, but one of the key moments was a dangerous tackle call on Sam Verrills late in the half when the Roosters are only down 8-6. And he gets called for a dangerous tackle when he's basically down on his knees and just chops the player in half and the player falls over the top of him. I don't know how players can tackle if that's a dangerous tackle. That gives the Panthers a penalty right at the end of the half, a minute to go. They attack the Roosters line. They score a converted try. So you're thinking that's going to break the Roosters back. But the Roosters actually come back in. And as Brent says, Robbo loves to have a whinge. But I watched his whinge. I thought he was justified in everything he said. Roosters come back, cut the game to two. There's a huge moment in the second half which did go the Roosters' way, which was a charge down kick. And Kikau is going to score for all money. It's going to extend the Panthers' lead back to eight. No one is within 20 metres of him. Somehow doesn't get the bounce to sit up and fumbles a pickup off his bootlaces. So the Roosters get a massive let off. They remain down 2 points when they would have been down eight. They score the next set and hit the front through Sammy Verrills. And they hold that lead for the next 15 minutes as well and had a real chance to win. And this is where I did think it was so harsh because I just felt like the referee was doing everything possible. And I honestly don't even like to name the refs, and I don't like to keep track in my mind of like which refs are screwing which teams, because I'm not a believer in anyone's gone out there on purpose to screw certain teams repeatedly. So it's not about, you know, naming an individual, but it felt like every possible opportunity was being given for the Panthers to get back in the game. There was multiple penalties and six agains for being inside the 10, all going the Panthers' way. There's one where there's a drop ball by the Panthers and it's called for crowding by the Roosters. I really didn't see much in that. The Roosters force an error on their try line. Oh, I actually wanted to mention earlier in the game, Crichton got sent to the bin for a sin bin. Looking at the replay, I think it's a fair sin bin. The Panthers made a break. I don't think it was your typical like cynical professional foul. Like, I don't actually think Angus Crichton was pulling Stephen Crichton back to stop him scoring. I think Stephen Crichton ran across right in front of Angus Crichton's path, and he was actually trying to get to the player to make the tackle. So he just kind of pulled a player out of his way that was in between him and the ball carrier. But what was really weird about it was they played it like rugby union rules. They let the Panthers play four more plays of that set. And then when the Panthers made a mistake, then they went back and said they're playing advantage. I'd love to know the actual rule on that, because I thought if you see something that's a sin binable offense, you have to just stop the game. And the team that had the momentum is going to say, oh, why are you stopping the game? And you say, well, you know, it's foul play. We've got to deal with this here and now. I didn't know you can have it both ways and let a team have a whole set and then go back and then sin bin and penalize. So I thought that was harsh. And then, as I say, you just keep giving Penrith opportunity after opportunity when the Roosters were repelling them and the Roosters were really gallant and the Panthers got in front. And even then there were more penalty or six against going Penrith's way to get the all-important try that put it beyond a converted try to the final score, which was 26-18. So I do feel for the Roosters, but kind of refereed out of the game. But let me know if you guys agree with my assessment there. Moving to Saturday, so this one hurts to talk about. This one leaves a foul taste in my mouth because we like the Sharks. And the line's 8.5, and they won 18-6. One thing that really killed us in this game was after we bet on Wednesday, and yes, there was some forecast for potentially some rain, but not the degree, not the vast amount of rain that ended up raining down on Sydney over the weekend. And you know, of course, I heard it all after the result. Why did you play Sharks over 23.5 in that terrible rain? But you got to understand, if it's that easy, people would have all backed unders on Wednesday, Thursday. You know, the total was over 40 for this game. The Sharks total was 24.5. By kickoff, those had reduced. And by kickoff, no, I didn't love our bet of over 23.5 when it's played in a swimming pool. But I'll get to that because our other best bet was Sharks minus 3.5 in the first half, where you're not too worried about conditions, because if it's hard for the Sharks to score much and get in front, it's going to be hard for the Dogs to score well. The way this game started, if you didn't see it, I was really confident. The Sharkies came out playing really positive footy, and it reminded me of that game where the Sharks beat the Dragons by like 30 on a really rainy Thursday night, and the Sharkies played dry weather footy, and they come out spinning the ball. They scored a try in the first 5 minutes. They looked great. They were putting the Dogs under pressure. I thought the Doggies can't go with them here. The Doggies thought it was going to be an arm wrestle, but the Sharkies actually willing to play positive footy. But I tell you, after the Sharkies didn't take a couple of chances, the final 20 minutes of the first half was agonizing to watch. Now, I counted 20 different times the Sharks made a mistake or the referee made a call that gave the Bulldogs a new set. The Sharks dropped the ball 10 times in the first half alone, and eight of them had to be in the final 20 minutes. The Dogs got, I think, like six or seven set restarts. It seemed like they were being given every opportunity. Again, I'm talking refs, but if you watched it, every opportunity to get in that game and to score points, and penalties as well, and end of the set penalties. And I'm just thinking, Sharks are going to crack. Sharks are going to crack. They're holding the Dogs out. They held the Doggies out for 38 minutes. No matter what happened, the Doggies kept getting another chance. Like, the Sharks would hold them out for a set, and then Wade Graham would go for an early kick and it'd be off the side of his boot out in the full. Or the Sharkies would finally get the ball again. I'm going, just complete your set here. No, they'd spill it playing the ball. But anyway, 38 minutes to go, maybe even 39th minute. There's a bogus knock-on call against the Sharks on fifth tackle. So, of course, the Doggies get a scrum. Final minute of the game. I just knew they were going to score. Remember, at the time, it's 6-0 Sharks. We're laying 3.5. Sharkies keep them out the whole set. Final play. What do you reckon happens in the rain? Grubber in behind. Skidding ball. Avarillo grounds it. 6-all. It's the only points the Dogs score. Happens to be in the final second of the first half. Kills that halftime bet. They don't score again second half. Sharkies get back on top and control the game and win by 12. And, you know, at halftime, 6-all, you're devastated because you didn't cover the first half line. And then you're not looking good to get over 23.5. But if you watch the final 10 minutes of the Sharks game, they had their chances to get that fourth try. There's a miracle try saver by Adokar when the kick was over his head, claimed by Katoa. There's kicks in the in goal by the Sharkies that are skidding around that could have easily been grounded. They weren't. So, look, I hate to use an excuse. You know, I don't get any satisfaction, really. I get the tiniest fragment of satisfaction from the fact that if you listen to our preview, we didn't say the Dogs were a good bet. We liked the Sharks. Maybe you played Sharks head-to-head. Maybe you laid the points with the Sharks. Like, we gave you a good handicap, but we took two best bets. Neither of them won. We pride ourselves on executing correctly. So how you really can increase your edge over the bookies and how you can actually win 60% long-term over the bookies, you got to be able to pick the right sides and the handicaps a lot of the time, but then you got to pick the right markets and the best ways to exercise that handicap. We pride ourselves in the ability to do that. And this year, it just hasn't worked out. It hasn't been the case. There's been so many games where we've played a halftime line and the halftime line doesn't cover, but the team covered the full-time line. So it's really painful to me. And, you know, it's not an excuse because we need to find the best ways to execute our handicap. I think last year it was the opposite. We got played some halftime bets on some underdogs. They covered halftime, then they got blown out full-time. And I'm laughing saying, see, pick the perfect market. So that hurts. It's happened many times to us. You lose both narrowly, but that's how it went. The next game was the Queensland Derby, Broncos, Cowboys. Plenty of points in this one. The Cowboys end up winning 40-26. Let us know your thoughts on that as well. It was back and forth, 10-8 at halftime to the Cows. They really grabbed the game by the scruff of the neck when they come out and get the back-to-back tries to start the second half. The Cowboys then had to withstand a bit of a comeback by the Broncos. The Broncos threw a lot at them. The Broncos suffered a bit of misfortune. Tamari Martin, early rib injury. Reynolds didn't look 100% to me. I thought Ezra Mann was electric and he was in everything, and he had one of the hits of the season flying out like a missile, but he really adds a spark that, you know, Tyson Gamble just adds a grittiness, and he's not going to let you down for Brisbane. But Mann can bring their offense to an extra dimension there. So I think long-term, it makes the Broncos more scary, and it's great that they're getting reps with Mann in the halves with Reynolds. But you've got to talk about the Cowboys here because they were really tough, and not only did they withstand a bit of a fight back by Brisbane, they got a couple of late tries as well to blow out the score. And I thought Tom Gilbert was really strong. So let me know if you guys agree, or is there another Queensland back rower that you would put in the mix for Billy Slater's team tomorrow? Look, I think the other thing about this game was people said, you know, Brisbane got beat by 30 against the Cowboys earlier this year, where you'd say they got ambushed when none of us realized how good North Queensland was. And also Brisbane was a couple of wins lower on the ladder. So this game would mean more to Brisbane. But the Cowboys haven't had big games up in Townsville for so many years where it was meaningful, where they were having a good season. You could see how much it meant to them. So I think what they did in this game last night was really cemented themselves as a top four side. Even though the Storm lost, I think they're going to be in the four. We know Penrith will be in the four, and I think we know Cowboys will be in the four. That last spot, maybe it's the side I just spoke about, the Cronulla Sharks, because other teams like Brisbane, like Parramatta, took a step back. And we'll talk about Parramatta next, because this one surprised me. With the Rabbitohs winning 30-12, and Tristan mentioned a lot of money came in late on the Rabbitohs, and there was no, you know, real personnel news. I don't know if Ryan Madison was ruled out on Wednesday, so I can't even say that's the reason. But maybe the Rabbitohs were just the sharp side. I know Podonis felt that way and wanted to play the Rabbitohs. I thought this was a spot for Parramatta to do well, and I thought even on game day with the really poor conditions, again, another game in Sydney played in a monsoon, I thought the team with the stronger, more powerful forward pack, and the Eels got this rep forward pack, particularly front row, I thought that would serve them well. But what evaded the Eels, what really hurt them was they love to offload. And they had to put those away in this game, and it really showed that Parramatta had so little in attack. And the Bunnies just looked a bit sharper. Obviously, Luttrell was back, and you felt like Luttrell's, the way he's just so powerful in his carries, really suited the heavy track. He looked great. As I said before, he ruled himself out of Origin. It would have been really interesting. I'd like to know, would you guys have picked him if he, obviously, if he said he was available? And what position would you have played him? I mentioned before I wouldn't move Burton, so would Luttrell do all right on the right center? I feel like it's a bit different. You do feel like, don't know, just him being a lefty, left foot step, maybe right hand fend. Don't know, he'd look out of place in right center, but maybe he would have got there, maybe not. He took the decision out of Freddie's hands in the end. The other huge moment in this game is Parramatta's second best, but they're only down 12-6 late in the first half. They get one final set to attack. They got a chance to level the score. They throw an intercept to Alex Johnson trying to push an offload on that occasion, and it's 18-12. And Parramatta actually could never recover from that. So, as Jeremy says there, Eels are hot and cold. Like, that's the thing they've really struggled with. We go back to some of their biggest wins of the season. They've also got some of the most shocking losses this season, but they just cannot seem to string form together. I think I said just a week ago, I reckon the Eels will make the four. You know, now you really question it because you see that form, but also they drop a game where they were favourites to win. So, whereas I guess South Sydney remind everyone they're not completely done with, and they've had excuses. They've had a new halfback this year. Luttrell's been out most of the year. So you wonder if South Sydney's the kind of side that could make a run. All right, what about this game? This is the kind of game today, Warriors-Tigers, where I was thinking I should have a live stream. You guys should see how emotional I get and how much I ride these best bets, because I knew, I felt like this was a seminal moment in our season. We're 0-2 for the round. We've got two best bets on this game. We always get questioned when we take the Warriors. The mixed matchup was on the line. So I just felt like it was a huge one, and it was set up for a crushing defeat for the pod, especially when the news broke a couple of days earlier that, like, there were COVID cases and that the Warriors had gotten home and they'd been visiting everyone they possibly could in schools and community groups. And sure enough, Reece Walsh is out with COVID, and Fenua Blake's had COVID, and other players have been isolating from the team. And I just thought, oh no, because I just thought it was the mother of all spots to back the Warriors. And we got a -3.5 on Wednesday, and I thought that's just one of the best bets you can make this season. But then you hear all the COVID news, it just totally counteracts what value you might have found. And what I think is really interesting and shows what a good bet we made on Wednesday is that we played -3.5 on the Warriors. They lose Reece Walsh. The line's still -2.5, -3.5 today, despite the adversity. So even after some things went against us that we had no clue about on Wednesday, we still didn't end up with a bad line or a bad team total, because our other best bet was Warriors over 21.5. And man, you did feel the emotion. It was amazing. Like, it was amazing to see those Warriors fans. You feel happy for them, because say what you want about their club, about their form, about how the Warriors fans say this year's our year every year and they're delusional and all that, but they got amazing passion and spirit. They really get behind their team. And I know as well, of course, they hadn't had a game at home for 1,000 days. You say, yeah, of course it was sold out, but you get chills actually watching how much it meant to them and watching seeing the atmosphere there. And I said this on Wednesday, like, it seemed just terrible bad luck for the Tigers to be drawn to play this game, because whoever was going to have to play the Warriors in their return home was going to get a tough one. Now, if it was a top eight or top four side, probably still could have come in and won this because the Warriors are a limited team that have really struggled in 2022. But with it being the Tigers, who don't have a lot to threaten you with, and today they didn't score a try. If I didn't say the score, it was 22-2, and we did win both our best bets, and we needed a late try and a sideline conversion. Thanking you, Sean Johnson. Not always the most reliable kicker, but slots every kick today, including one from the sideline, and we do win it. I've got to always admit when we have a lucky win or a narrow win. Well, I don't know if we were lucky to win over 21.5 points because Warriors had enough chances today, but you're always a bit lucky when it takes a sideline conversion late in the game. So, look, I will say that one went in our favour. Brent making a comment about the referee there, and that's kind of what you expect. Like, the Warriors got all the early penalties. Of course they did because the crowd was riding the ref. Warriors got all the repeat sets. The only problem was Warriors couldn't take any of their chances early, and I was so worried because a team that is a confidence team like the Warriors, very first set, Wade Egan goes straight through the line. He's got, the fullback outside him or running alongside him, Harris Tevita, draw and pass, and you're in under the sticks to open the game. And Harris Tevita somehow trips over Egan's heels and falls over. And the very next play, Tavanga drops the ball. And that was one of, honestly, I counted so many chances the Warriors blew. Like, Johnson kicks it into the line. It's played at. He gets the ball back. Ref says six again. And then he tries to fire a three-man cutout bullet pass to his center who drops it on first tackle. Or another time, the Warriors got a six again and went blindside. And the center threw a no-look offload pass out over the sideline. Like, you're completely letting the Tigers off the hook. And I just had all the makings of all the emotions there, all the opportunities are there, and the Warriors won't take them. And then the Tigers will get something on the other end, and the Warriors will start thinking, hey, this isn't meant to happen, and they'll implode. Luckily, the Warriors did get a couple of tries on the board, led 14-2 at the end and at halftime. And look, this is the other thing I would say about this game. If you're a Tigers fan, are there any out there that you can comment, let me know? I feel like you'd be reasonably proud because they didn't give the Warriors anything easy, and they did fight bloody hard, and they were up against it all day. And I said they were never going to get, you know, the calls, the lopsided calls their way. But in the end, the Warriors scored just three tries. Two of them are off bombs, like that are kind of dropped bombs or contested by the Warriors and end up in their hands for a grounding. I should also mention James Tarmow was scratched. So, you know, I'll tell you when we get a player withdrawn that goes against us, which was Reece Walsh, which I think is more meaningful. But Tarmow, captain of the Tigers, one of many captains, he didn't play either. And yet the Tigers still hung in there. It was a pretty tough battle with pretty high completions. And the other thing that just stood out to me, and I think this is, again, you know, this is not really lucky because it's part of our handicap, that we thought the game would mean so much to the Warriors. They shouldn't be letting in any soft tries that they're used to letting in. They should keep their focus, keep their intensity. Now, I was worried after such an emotional high and seeing some Warriors players like in tears in the sheds before the game, would there be a burnout or a letdown, or would they get in front but then, you know, invariably lose focus for a few minutes because they were almost too intense? But the Warriors kept up their intensity all game. What let them down was their end of sets mostly, their execution. But I've got to say, how about the power of some of those outside back runs? Like the Warriors back four, or even Harris Tevita, so back five, were just running it like possessed to start every set, especially with Tenny Zalesniak. I call him the battering ram. Like every set, they were just so powerful and hammering the Tigers' defense, and the Tigers were withstanding it for the most part. But at the end of the day, the Warriors did wear them down with that incredible intensity and power in their ball carrying. And I think that was definitely inspired by the crowd. I think if this game was in Redcliffe today, it could have been quite a different scoreline. So, look, we'll take it because I know a lot of people will be saying, oh, yeah, of course the Warriors won this game. They were always going to win the homecoming. And that's exactly what I said on Wednesday. So if we're all going to say it after the game, why don't we bet on it? We did, and we got the spoils. And that ultimately gave us kind of an insurmountable lead for the mixed matchup. It would have taken 32 points to beat us with the Dragons. They were 20 short of that. They got 12 as they did beat the Raiders. Another game in really poor conditions and a tough one. Anybody's game. The Dragons had the breeze at their backs And Ben Hunt did play as well, which was a big boost for them because he was questionable. And the opening try is the Raiders trying to use that really powerful breeze and go short drop out. And they do get contact with the ball and they bat it straight to Amon, who ends up catching the tap back and scoring easy. And then the Raiders got another try right before halftime to lead 12-4. And I was a little bit nervous for the mixed matchup for a second because then the Dragons went really close against in the first minute of the second half. I'm thinking, oh, that could be 18 points. And even though it's poor conditions, what if the Raiders aren't on here? In the end, the bunker found it held up. I think it was McCulloch. And the Dragons didn't score again. But luckily for them, they didn't need to score again. The Raiders did through Hudson Young, gave us a grandstand finish to end the round. And how about the final 5 minutes of this game where the Raiders hold the Dragons out, earn a penalty, wind at their backs, Whiten kicking for touch, gets too greedy. Even with the wind behind him, swirling wind, maybe it didn't quite get over the sideline because he can't find touch and takes away a golden opportunity by the Raiders to mount some pressure with five to go. They still got another chance. Was it Sloan at the back? Drops that final bomb. And Sloan or Ramsey, sorry. And the Raiders get a full set with a minute to go. And what about the call right at the end? And I cannot understand this. And I need someone who's a rules expert to clarify this with me as well. Now, I understand during a regular play, if there's a ruck infringement and you're inside your own 40, you get a penalty. If there's a ruck infringement and you're beyond your own 40, it's a six again. But isn't there some sort of common sense or discretion applied by the refs that if there's an infringement, but there's only like 10 seconds to go in the first half, you don't want a six again. A six again doesn't help you if it's like third tackle, right? You want the penalty. Maybe you can have a shot at goal. And that's exactly what the Raiders would have wanted. The ref gave the Raiders a six again with 5 seconds to go right in front of the post, you know, and on like fourth tackle. Like what? Like, I think you have to say if the Dragons did something wrong there and it was a slow play of the ball or some form of ruck infringement, it has to be a penalty. Like unless the referee was hindered by the fact that no, to the letter of the law, you're not allowed to call a penalty. But if that's the case, if you feel a player like, you know, putting enormous pressure on you, you've almost got to drop the ball because if you drop it, then the ref can't call six again and then it has to be a penalty. So it's a weird quirk that if you hold onto the ball, it's a six again. But if you drop it and the player did something wrong, it's going to be a penalty. And in one case, you can kick 2 points and in the other, you can't. So I guess Dragons did just enough. That's a brutal way to end for the Raiders. I guess they're used to losing a lot of narrow ones and gutsy win by the Dragons, story of their season. They don't seem to blow many teams away, but they've been winning their fair share of close ones. And that's just a typical Dragons game. Just bring you down into the grindhouse and see if they can match wits with you. And they got the chocolates on this occasion. So that will do it for the wrap of round 16. So, you know, winning round in the sense if we go 2-2 on our best bets and we win a $3 mixed matchup, we've got to be kind of happy. But I reckon you could go back a few weeks before you find a game we really got wrong. Because I kind of think like the reason we didn't sweep in round 15 was we liked Dragons over Souths, but Souths was so bad they got beat by 20 and we took either team 1-12. And look how much better Souths were this week. And then again, lost two best bets on a Sharks game where we liked the Sharks and the Sharks covered. So I feel like not getting a great reward for seeing the games reasonably well. But again, that's punting. That is how it's going to go. And we'll be back to the drawing board as we always are for Wednesday to preview a short round. So it'll be a short pod. That's going to be round 17. But thanks again for tuning in, guys. Really appreciate it. Let us know your thoughts if you've got any others for the round or Origin as well. Enjoy your week. And we'll see you on Wednesday. Happy birthday, Padonis. Lego.